When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, this is Alec Vishal Rubin, here to welcome you to another impactful episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. I don't know about you, but body image has always been a challenge in my life, and it had a bumpy start until yoga and compassion came into the picture. Today we have the opportunity to hear from Chelsea Roff, the founder of the renowned nonprofit Eat, Breathe, Thrive. Chelsea has a fascinating story, and we are excited to share it with you.
I've been recovered from an eating disorder for about 7 years. And the experience of having an eating disorder, being in recovery, and being recovered are distinctly different. Internally, subjectively, I can't tell you how different my inner world is.
Enjoy this powerful episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast with Chelsea Roff as we highlight Eat, Breathe, Thrive. Namaste, my friends, and welcome back to the Yoga Revealed podcast. This is Alec Rubin coming to you from Boulder, Colorado. And we hope that your summer has been so insightful and that you've been enjoying the podcasts and the interviews that we have been sharing with you. They have been so insightful to us, and we are so excited to bring to you today a beautiful human being named Chelsea Roff, the founder of Eat, Breathe, Thrive. And Chelsea, thank you so much for taking time out of your day and to visit Boulder and to come to my home and to share with us your journey of yoga.
Sure, Alec. Boulder feels like a home away from home, and it's great to meet you and great to connect with your listeners.
Awesome. Thank you. So if you wouldn't mind sharing with us how you found yoga and who you are for maybe those of our listeners who haven't heard of Chelsea Roff before.
Sure. I've been practicing, just about 10 years now, which is unbelievable. I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm one of those people. So it's been a while. Today I'm running a nonprofit that helps people with eating disorders. As you know, won't be a huge surprise to probably a large part of your audience. That was how I found yoga. And it's so funny because when I talk to people about why they love this practice, so often there's wound is the wrong word, but like a tender place beneath what drew them to the practice, whether it was I'm struggling with depression, or I've been having really bad anxiety, or I was going through a divorce, or I lost my father or my mother. Oftentimes there's this tender place beneath the pull to yoga, if you will. And that was how it was for me, for sure. I had a super difficult eating disorder in my youth, nearly took my life. When I was 15, I had a stroke as a result of the eating disorder, was in the hospital for a couple years. And when I came out of the hospital, I had a really wonderful therapist who strongly encouraged me to go to yoga. And I was not a willing patient. I was nor a willing student, for that matter. Mm. You know, my therapist encouraged me over and over again, and I kept telling her, no, yoga's fluffy and esoteric, and it's for wealthy white women who don't have anything to do during their days. It's not me, even though I'm white. But I actually went to yoga because it was the only form of exercise that I was allowed to do. And I was recently out of treatment and in a body that was twice as large as it had been when I went into treatment. And I was still underweight. So I was in this body that felt... I felt like an alien in my own body when I came to the yoga practice. And so I was in this body that didn't feel good and felt too big. And I went to yoga because it was the only form of exercise I was allowed to do. And I wanted to fix my body because I felt like it was getting fat. So I found my way to a yoga class. Didn't have one of those light up the sky moments in finding the practice. I wasn't like, oh my God, I've found my home. I was like, this is awkward and uncomfortable and what's a chaturanga? I hate not being good at something. But I said to you earlier, yoga is a sneaky practice. And so even though what drove me to go to the studio over and over again was this angst about my body and this need to fix it, yoga slowly started to change how I related to my body from the inside. So I became gentler with myself. I started to notice things that were happening, whether it was, you know, my muscles stretching and that feeling inside, or my stomach rumbling, or my breath quickening or shortening. I started to get quieter inside and started to kind of meet myself, if you will. So that's how I found my way to the practice.
Wow. And who's one of your first teachers that you're greatly influenced by?
Oh, no one your listeners would have known probably, or would have heard of. My first yoga teacher, is a woman named Diana Rowell. And she, to this day, is one of my favorite people on the planet. I remember I walked in to that first yoga class, and Diana's, to give you kind of a picture in your mind, she's probably about 5'7", 5'8", I'd guess. She's voluptuous. She's African-American. And she inhabits her space with joy. And when I say she inhabits her space, she inhabits her body and everything around her with this joy and grace and love and gentleness. And I remember walking in and going, I want whatever that woman's on. So that was my first teacher. I was deeply influenced by another woman in the Dallas area. These are both Texas teachers, you know, that just own their own little studios. Another woman named Stacy Dawkins. Hmm. She trained me to teach yoga. And that's another woman who just, it's not so much what they look like on the outside or who they've studied with. It's how they inhabit their life. They just have, Stacy's got confidence and wisdom and compassion and laughter like no one I've ever met before. And I just, you know, it's those are the teachers who have influenced me the most are the people who live the practice.
Well, it seems like those traits have poured over into you and they're being reflected out in the world. So you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
So I'm curious, can you share with us, what's the timeline from when you started to practice more and more and then you had this idea, eat, breathe, thrive?
I wish it had come like that.
Or how did that manifest?
Sure. Man, that would be a good story for the book. Just this idea dropped out of the ether into my mind. No, it was much more like a stumbling act than an idea that showed up. I practiced for several years. I was 17 when I came to the practice. And I was in college. I started college a little bit early. And I was studying neuroscience. And I was not your typical college kid. You know, I had just gotten out of 2 years in a hospital. So I was socially awkward. I was a nerd. I didn't drink. I didn't party. I didn't really like other human beings that much. So I was a neuroscience lab rat, basically. And my research in university, you know, started to mesh with my yoga practice because I was going to this yoga mat day after day and I kept going, what is this practice? Why does it work so well? Like, I want to figure it out. I want to like take it apart and figure out like, what's the mechanism that makes yoga feel like a happy drug? Because it's not like heroin. Like, there's something really special about yoga that makes you feel happy but doesn't have all these deleterious consequences. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So my research in university was on yoga-based programs for people with breast cancer and yoga-based programs for people with HIV. So we were looking, I worked in a psychoneuroimmunology lab, which is a really long word that means, for those of you who can't see, Alex's eyes just like popped out of his head. So it means how your mental state affects your brain, which affects your nervous system.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Really interesting. So I was studying those types of programs in university. And long story short, toward the end of my tenure at that university, I had a doctor from my old hospital who asked if I would come do a talk for his patients. And I was like, no. No, not interested. And he's like, no, you're doing really well. I want you to come in and I want them to see that somebody gets over this illness and that there's, you know, joy and happiness on the other side. And I was like, I don't want to go anywhere near someone with an eating disorder ever again. I was so ashamed of that part of myself that had gotten sick and had been, you know, quote unquote weak, that I didn't want to go near anyone that reminded me of this dark part of my life that I felt like I was over and I was past. But my doctor said, you owe me. So I did it and I went and did this talk, and suffice it to say that my expectations around how I would react to people with eating disorders were completely wrong. I was just all lit up when I left. I loved connecting with them. I felt like I got it. Not I got it, but I got them. Like, it was like talking to a sister or talking to someone that was created of the same mold. So we were, you know, I was in there, I gave this talk, and I just felt like I was with my sisters and my brothers. And I talked to them about how useful I thought yoga was. And they were like, well, that's great for you, but we're not allowed to do yoga because we're on exercise restriction in this hospital. And I was like, well, that's silly. So I went back to my doctor and I'm like, why can't they do yoga? They should be able to do yoga. You know, there's so many ways that this practice could serve as a valuable complement to traditional forms of treatment. And I laid it out and he said, well, write me a proposal. And I was like, okay. And I laid out a program, a 6-week program that included yoga, included meditation, included psychoeducation. So all the stuff I'd been learning about in neuroscience, about how the nervous system works and the effects that yoga have on the nervous system, included a bunch of exercises. And that was the birth of this program that is now at the heart of our organization. Now, the organization didn't start right then. Yeah. For a long time, I was teaching this 6-week program in treatment centers just as my kind of pet volunteer project. I went into science journalism after college, and I actually worked for Deepak Chopra's family for a while, covering like science related stories. And this was just my baby pet project that, you know, wasn't a quote real job. And then, you know, I've had some random things happen in my life that seem inexplicable. Like, I had Sanjay Gupta call me up one day, literally out of nowhere. Sanjay Gupta, chief medical correspondent for CNN, called me up and say, hey, Chelsea, I heard you were running this program in treatment centers. Can I come do a story on it? I was like, okay.
What?
So that happened, and a whole bunch of people heard about the program, and I started getting calls from Wisconsin saying, hey, will you teach this program in Wisconsin? I'm like, no, I live in LA. I'm not going to come out to Wisconsin. And they said, well, will you come out and train us? And it became the snowball. So I started teaching trainings. And then I was like, I went to my boss and I'm like, can I have more time off? And she's like, no, you need to quit and start a nonprofit. Like, this is clearly your dharma. And I was like, are you telling me to quit? She's like, yes, I am. This is clearly what you're meant to do. It was Deepak's daughter, actually, Malika. And she encouraged me. She's like, She's like, this is clearly your work. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Raise some money, start a nonprofit. And that's a whole story in and of itself, too. So
wow.
That's
fascinating.
It was a crazy
story. This 6-week course sounds unbelievable. Is it still to this day a 6-week course?
Yeah, great question. Well, yes and no. So we have 3 types of programs now. So that original program that I was just teaching in treatment centers has become our clinical program. And we have 6-week versions and 12-week versions. So that program is for people with clinical eating disorders, people with anorexia, people with bulimia, people with severe mental health issues. And that program is run by mental health practitioners in treatment centers. So not by just your random yoga teacher. Yes. Psychotherapists, social workers, people in treatment centers as part of an integrated treatment curriculum. So this program isn't just some like yoga class they go to on the side. This is part of a treatment protocol. And we have that running at a few treatment centers in the U.S. The bigger branch of our programs now is actually our community programs. So this is still the 6-week curriculum. These are programs that are run in yoga studios and community centers and YMCAs all throughout the world now, in Scotland and in England and in Italy and in the U.S. And these are programs, the same curriculum, 6-week program for people struggling with just run-of-the-mill food and body image issues. I don't feel comfortable in my own skin. My boyfriend broke up with me, and now I want to eat ice cream. I'm going through a divorce. I just had a baby, and I don't know how to find home in my own body. These are 6-week programs that are kind of like an AA for people with food and body image issues plus yoga.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lots of questions arise. So let's see here. In today's mind state of Chelsea Roth, do you still have a relationship with this other part of yourself that you were saying earlier that you felt shame at one point? Like, how has yoga or how has the mental awareness that you've cultivated over years been allowed you to shift any arising residue of this shadow? Does that make sense? How do you move forward off that with so much practice and integration?
Great question. There's a big debate in the mental health community about whether it's possible to fully recover from eating disorders. For many years, eating disorders have been thought of as very similar to substance abuse disorders. So once you're an alcoholic, you're always going to struggle with this. Once you have anorexia, you're always going to struggle with this. My experience has not been that. I had an eating disorder for 7 years. I was in recovery from an eating disorder for about 2.5 years, maybe 3. And I've been recovered from an eating disorder for about 7 years. And the experience of having an eating disorder, being in recovery, and being recovered are distinctly different. Internally, subjectively, I can't tell you how different my inner world is. How that happened, I don't know. I've made my career out of trying to figure out the different variables that contribute to being in recovery versus being recovered. But I can say that there is a big brick wall that's completely unscalable where my eating disorder used to be. It's weird, to be honest with you. It's really strange. I used to not be able to look at a plate of food without going 37 plus 42 plus 56 and counting up calories and counting up carbs and counting up fat grams. I could, while I was in recovery, that would happen and I could choose not to behave based on that information, but I couldn't turn off that mind state. Does that make sense? I don't even know how many calories are in different things these days. And my relationship with my body has changed dramatically. That said, and I could go into, for the people who have had eating disorders, that would probably be a very interesting conversation. For people who haven't, it's probably far too detailed. I could go into the different shades of that experience, if you will. But I think it's important to note that even though you can my belief is that you can recover from an eating disorder, that doesn't mean you recovered from life. That doesn't mean that I don't get depressed sometimes or go through periods of acting out in behaviors that are completely not serving me and have to look at that, or that I don't have days where I wake up and go, oh my gosh, why doesn't my jeans fit the way they used to, or whatever. I'm not recovered from life. I'm not this, like, you know, enlightened human being, but I'm free from the shackles of a disease that, oh God, nearly killed me. And it's just one of the most unpleasant forms of suffering I've experienced in this life. So that doesn't mean that I'm free from suffering. It just means that I've let those shackles go. There's probably still some other chains to let go of, but it's remarkably different.
Wow.
Does that answer your
question? Yes, it does. I think so. I mean, I think it provides the shimmer of hope that we can heal in whatever mental affliction or physical affliction is present today.
Yeah. And again, not to say that there won't be bumps in the road and challenges. You know, I've never been through a divorce. Most of my immediate family members are still around. If one of those life experiences happened, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't pretend to say I'm certain that I've recovered and it will always feel this way. But I can say that the experience of being alive in this physical form now is very different than how it was in the early stages of an eating disorder.
Mm.
And yoga was a massive part of that.
Mm. So if you had any advice, I can't help but think, you know, when I took one of my first trainings, the words that really stuck with me to this day is, you never know the other person's story.
Mm.
So if you had any advice for teachers that are listening today who do or don't or have had an eating disorder, and, you know, they have their students in class. What is some advice from you to these teachers that could hold space for people in their class, whether the people in class do or don't have an eating disorder? You know, like, I feel like that it's such a sensitive topic to have someone in class, whether teacher knows it or not. And how, because I don't know, is it something that touch triggers? Is it something that spoken word triggers? Loving self triggers? Kind of get where I'm going?
I do get where you're going. It's such a big question. I'll just share things as they
please
come. The first thought that comes to mind is for yoga teachers to recognize their role and recognize what their role is not. So oftentimes yoga teachers, and really any helping professionals, care a whole lot and want to give as much as humanly possible. And I think it's important for yoga teachers to recognize that they're not mental health practitioners. I run an organization, I teach yoga, I teach meditation, but I'm not a psychologist. And it's important for me to stay in my role, because when I start to step out of that role, we get into territory that could really be harmful to students. So I think my first piece of insight, maybe not advice, is just that your role as a yoga teacher is not to provide therapy, it's not to diagnose, it's not to take on, you know, the burden of getting this person help. Your role as a yoga teacher is to offer the practice. So that would be my first insight. You asked about touch, you asked about words. Those are deep rabbit holes.
Yeah,
I could go down with you, I don't know, about in an hour. You know, in terms of language, one thing I would encourage yoga teachers to be aware of is just that every body is different. And so just because your body can contort into certain positions doesn't mean that everyone in class will be able to. And many of the varieties of bodily experience are unseen. So we're talking scar tissue, we're talking different shapes of bones. So sometimes yoga teachers get into a pattern of saying, if you want to advance this pose, level 2 of this pose, to make it harder, do this. I generally caution people around that language. People are going to interpret things as they will. So even if you don't say to advance this pose, your students may interpret it that way anyway. Hmm. In terms of touch, that's a deep rabbit hole. There's a lot of research behind the healing and therapeutic value of touch. But there's also a lot of research behind how touch can trigger people who have had traumatic experiences. And so back to that, every body is different. Every human psyche is different. So you don't know who's in your class, who in your class has recently experienced sexual assault or experienced that when they were a kid. And you coming over in child's pose or happy baby pose and pressing their feet down might be really upsetting. So I just encourage teachers to keep their mind on, there's a lot I don't know happening.
Beautiful. Thank you.
But that's a whole...
No, they're big rabbit holes, but I think it's just a nice little
I hope that's useful.
Offering. I think that first one especially is huge.
Yeah, you're not a therapist.
Yeah, totally.
Or even if you are a therapist, when you're being a yoga teacher, your role is not to be a therapist.
So I'm curious if you could have any advice from present day Chelsea to Chelsea, 10 years ago when you're midst in the shadow of your eating disorder, what would you have offered yourself?
Wow. You've just knocked me flat on my back with that question. Oh, great question. Great question. I mean, instinctively, what I would have wanted to offer her is hope, because she didn't have hope. This was, there were many, many years of my life I didn't think that I was going to make it to 25, for sure. And I didn't want to. So instinctively, just knowing the inside of that experience, I would have wanted her to know that there is going to be a way out of the darkness. That said, I don't know if she could have heard it. It sounds so cliche and it sounds so simple, but I just would have wanted her to know that it's going to get better and there is a light that's going to guide you out of this darkness. And I can't tell you when it's going to come or what form, but I will tell you this is not going to last forever. The other thing that comes to mind is just be gentle. Just be easy with yourself. You don't have to have it all figured out. Stop judging yourself so much. Stop criticizing. Stop saying you should be here by now and all, But again, I don't know if I would have listened. I'm stubborn. but I think from my heart, the big thing I would have wanted little me to know is you're going to get out of this. And things won't be perfect, but they're going to be so much better than how they are now.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I hope, if you have people listening who are struggling with food and body image issues, I hope they know that it's not easy. It's such a dark darkness, but there is a way out. It's a really long road, but there's a whole bunch of us light carriers who have made our way out that go back in there with a candle looking for other lost souls. So,
wow. Maybe last year, Hanuman Festival, you were at Hanuman, correct?
Mm-hmm, I was.
And you were on this beautiful panel with Amy Ippoliti, Mary Claire Sweet, Mary Taylor, who's also my teacher. I love her so much.
Sisters on the Path.
Yeah, that was a powerful panel to share that space with four women who have, holding that torch.
Yep. And all have struggled with if not full blown eating disorders, disordered eating and body image issues. And all three, Mary Taylor, Mary Claire Sweet, and Amy Ippoliti were all open about it and transparent and said, yes, this is something I have struggled with, and this is an issue, and it's an issue that brings many of us to the yoga practice. It was a beautiful panel. It was really an honor to be standing with those women and have such transparency, because I think so often it's stuff we don't want to talk about. We don't want anybody to know, oh yeah, I have this dark part, you know, don't want anybody to see it because it's super vulnerable and tender.
How does Eat, Breathe, Thrive continue to get out into the world? Like, what are your major platforms and how do people find you, and how do you have students, people reach out to you? Like, you know, that's the hardest part, would it not be? Like, someone who's like, I do have a problem. Mm. I do have an issue. I don't mean to say if it's a problem or not. I feel that, you know, I haven't had eating disorders, so it's a sensitive topic for me because I don't want to impose, and it's not something that I've experienced. So, you know, what's that like?
Sure. Funny, one of the great things that's organically happened with Eat, Breathe, Thrive is that it's like a little little seed I planted that became a sprout and then became a tree and now has branches everywhere and all these little other branches branching off, which is a metaphor.
So cool.
But it is really cool, and it's part of our logo, which we never intended. This tree with branches coming off. But that's a metaphor to say that it's not just me doing it anymore. We've got close to 100 facilitators now throughout the world who are running programs in their own communities. So Eat, Breathe, Thrive doesn't have a central treatment center where you can come and heal. That's not how you're gonna find these programs. I run trainings, and I'm a globetrotter. I go about once a month to different cities around the world, and I train facilitators. And by facilitators, the people who show up to our trainings are generally yoga teachers and mental health practitioners. Sometimes educators, sometimes nurses, sometimes medical professionals, but professionals of some kind, helping professionals of some kind. So they come to a training, get done with our training, and then they run programs in their own community. And then I'm hands, not completely hands off. We definitely have like connection, and we do mentorship with them and all of that. But the great thing about Eat, Breathe, Thrive is if you're listening to this podcast from Wisconsin, there is a program in Wisconsin for you to go to. Mm. If you're listening to this podcast from Edinburgh, Scotland, there is a program in Edinburgh run by three incredible facilitators who bring a whole lot of different stuff to the table than I do. Mm. So that's how people find us, is not, they don't find me, they find one of our programs. And then if they want to take a training, chances are we're going to be in your area at some point in the next year. So if you're a yoga teacher or a mental health practitioner, and this is your heart, and this is something that you want to offer, a yoga-based program for people with food and body image issues, we are happy to give you a curriculum and send you off to the races and support you all the way.
Wow. And you're all over America?
Pretty much. I mean, not everywhere, but we've got programs in Colorado and Florida. I mean, one training a month for 3 years will get you to a lot of places.
One training a month for 3 years. Wow. Yeah.
Yep.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. Got program trainings coming up in Florida this year, New England, Texas. I'm going home to my home. Oh, get this. I'm going back to the hospital where I was treated, doing a conference for nurses there, a bunch of nurses who don't even, never treated me. And then I'm running a program at my home studio. So a training at my own home studio. So
it can be full circle.
Yeah, it's really neat. I'm so excited.
That'll be an emotional one.
No kidding. No kidding.
Wow.
Yeah, you nailed it, Alec.
So what's your relationship with kind of tapping more into the realm of yoga and how yoga shows up in your life with, you know, the awareness of Eat, Breathe, Thrive and all the service that it provides. What's your relationship to emotions in the yoga practice?
Good question. So I don't know how to answer. I'm going to go with my first instinct.
I love it.
I keep trying to talk around it. So actually, as part of the curriculum, we have four pillars of the program. And one of the pillars is actually self-regulation, or emotional regulation is another. I was just talking to a pair of facilitators about this. So one of the most valuable aspects of the yoga practice, in my view, so valuable that I literally made it a pillar of this program, is the fact that yoga provides somatic tools, so body-based tools for regulating one's emotional experience. So for instance, I'll give you a really clear example. I don't like to fly. I run one training a month and I really dislike flying. I don't like sitting in the back, not knowing how to fly the plane and it being completely in someone else's hands in a big metal tube 30,000 feet up. It just scares the bejesus out of me. Oh, and even though I can mentally go, Chelsea, you're safe. These pilots know what they're doing. The plane wants to be in the air. That's my mantra. The plane wants to be in the air. even though I can do that mental game with myself, my body doesn't respond. My body's like, we're about to die. Like my heart starts beating fast. My face flushes. My muscles get really tense.
Wow.
And essentially what's happening is my sympathetic nervous system, my fight or flight system, is in high gear. It thinks, oh my gosh, we're about to die. We got to prepare Chelsea's body to, run really fast. Where am I going to go in a plane? or fight the danger. And what am I going to fight, the air? So that happens to my body. And that's an emotional experience. It's anxiety. It's fear. All of these emotions are coming up. And they're not useful to me in that moment.
Mm.
My yoga practice has taught me a plethora of tools that I can use to calm my body back down. So even though I can't self-talk my way out of that, I can do ujjayi breath. I can do nadi shodhana. I can consciously relax my toes and then my ankles and then my calves. I can turn on a yoga nidra practice and have a guide if I'm really struggling with it. So yoga has provided me with these tools that I can use to speak the language my body speaks, which is not mental. It's not rational.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
That's an example for anxiety. There's also examples for depression. So, I think that's one of the most valuable aspects of the yoga practice for people struggling with mental health challenges of any kind, is that it's somatic tools that talk the language your body talks.
Wow. That makes sense. It does. Yeah. So I imagine that the yoga classes that you teach would be vastly different than a normal, Ashtanga class, Vinyasa class, even a Iyengar class, perhaps, even though pretty slow. What does a Eat, Breathe, Thrive Chelsea Roff guided yoga class look like?
Good question. I've never taken my own yoga class, Alec. I can only tell you what other people have told me. As far as an Eat, Breathe, Thrive class, we encourage yoga teachers to come with their heart and their personality and their style. We don't say you've got to teach in Chelsea style, because my style's a mutt of a practice. Like a yoga mutt is what I call myself. So for Eat, Breathe, Thrive, that varies, but mindful movement for sure.
Mm-hmm.
We encourage teachers to always connect breath, movement, and awareness. Those are the three non-negotiables: breath, movement, and awareness. So that's what I teach as well, is try to connect breath, movement, and awareness. I've been told that my asana classes, my actual physical movement classes, are a really big balance of yin and yang. So we do some practices in the beginning of the class, generally, depending on who I'm teaching to, that are designed to give you an opportunity to use some tools to regulate your emotions. We might do some more challenging poses just to get your heart beating a little faster and your face a little flush. That way we can pull in nadi shodhana, and then we can pull in ujjayi, and we can pull in some of these practices to calm the nervous system down. I love that a yoga class is almost like training ground for regulating your emotions. So usually, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So in the beginning of the class, sometimes we do that. End of the class, I love yin. I tend to do a lot of restorative and yin poses and a lot of opportunities to turn inward. That said, sometimes I teach fully restorative classes. Sometimes I teach completely yin classes. Sometimes we teach total chair classes. I tend to just teach to who's in the room.
Beautiful.
I've also been told that I hold poses for a really long time. I don't mean to. but someone told me that. Many people tell me that every class. They're like, you hold poses a long time. And I've been told that I teach really slowly. That's how I practice. That's
good.
So.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Do you ever fall asleep in yin postures?
Absolutely. Those are the really good, but it's like a weird lucid sleep.
Yeah.
Have you ever fallen asleep in nidra, but you're not really asleep?
Yes, and I've fallen asleep. Both, for sure.
I tend to go into, like, hypnotic states.
Yeah.
Like, I'm half there and half not. Yeah. And wow. I can't get to sleep at night because of
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Wow, well, that's so, I'm just so, I think it's such a blessing to be able to sit across from you and to receive and hear all about the good that Eat, Breathe, Thrive is bringing out into the world. So at the yoga workshop where I practice, you know, right at the door, I'm not sure if you've ever walked into the yoga workshop before, right at the door, if you're walking out, it says ... for the benefit of others ... And it's just like that, God, Eat, Breathe, Thrive just embodies, and you embody for the benefit of others. And that to me is, you know, we look into our yoga practice and we seek out all the good that yoga has brought into our life and how we can just give it away to all those in the world and in our life who are suffering. You know, in such a regard, it's just like that is what your dharma is. And it's so beautiful to sit across from someone who has had this upwelling of inspiration, initially from the opposite of inspiration and complete distraught self-destruction, and transmute all of this to make a huge difference. It's really inspiring, Chelsea.
Oh, I'm honored. And it's so funny that you end on a note of service, because you don't even know this. All of our 6-week programs end with a service project. So the group goes out and does a service project in their own community that they plan. It's one of our core values, because, you know, we think of yoga as a physical practice, but yoga has one of the beautiful parts of this tradition is there are so many branches of yoga, and one of them is seva, selfless service. This is a core part of the yoga practice, and that's your that's a part of yoga, is going out and serving and giving it up for the benefit of others. And I find that when you do, oftentimes what comes back is way more than you gave out. Not that should be the motivator. That, like, the fruits of service should be the motivator. The act of service should be the motivator. But, man, the fruits are just joyous and beautiful. And I want to recognize what you're doing, Alec. You know, this podcast is spreading the threads and the wisdom embedded in this ancient and yet modern tradition all throughout the world. So thank you for doing it, and thank you for having
me. Yeah, thank you. Before we close, two final things. Would you share the story of when you were a waitress and these three or four amazing blessings were bestowed upon you?
Oh, sure. wow. Okay. So some of you listening may remember a few years ago, there was this video that sort of took the interwebs by storm. I think it's had 30 million views at this point. I still get recognized randomly. So for those of you who haven't, if you want to see the video, all you have to do is Google "waitress gets pranked." So the story, I was living in LA at the time. I'd been running Eat, Breathe, Thrive for a couple years. We were in those first couple years of running a nonprofit, which are, I mean, speaking of difficult, like, just, man, it was like 60-hour work weeks for sure. And I had a friend who owned a restaurant in downtown Los Angeles, and he called me up and asked if I would come and help out at his restaurant waitressing. And I was like, absolutely not. 100% no. Boundaries, self-care, 60-hour work weeks, don't have time for that. Waitressing days are over. And he was somebody who never asked me for favors, and he really pushed it and was like, I need you to do this for me. I can't tell you all the details. I can't tell you why. I need you just to trust me. And I was like, oh, fine. All right. Only 3 days a week, you know. And so I started working at his restaurant. It was a barbecue restaurant, and I'm from Texas, so it was easy. And I actually quite enjoy waitressing. So I was doing it for about a month and a half, and I was going in every week for several days a week and just, you know, what I thought, you know, helping a friend out sort of thing. And one day I show up and we'll just keep this really short. I show up, lunch rush hits. I go to pick up somebody's bill at a table. The guy had just left, and there was $1,000 cash sitting on his bill. And I was like, holy moly. Like, he was flirtatious, but man, like $1,000 tip. So I was like, well, that's crazy. You know, try to put it in the tip jar, because I don't know what to do with that much cash. You know, we're in downtown LA. Go to the next table, immediately the next table, and there's a couple sitting there. And I go to pick up their bill, and they're like, Chelsea, you know, miss, we're so sorry. We forgot our wallet at home. And I was like, don't worry, it's been a really good tip day. Like, I can cover you. It's not a big deal. And they're like, no, we feel so bad. We used to be a waitress. We know how hard it is. We just happen to be travel agents, and we just so happen to have these vouchers. It's a voucher for a trip for two to Hawaii. Do you want it? And I was like, you've got what? You're pulling my leg. Come on. Like, if you actually watch the video, because it is on video, I look at both of them really suspiciously. Like, who are you, and what are you trying to pull over on me? So they leave. They leave pretty quickly. Go to the next table, and it's this woman who's reading a yoga book. And I'm like, oh, hey, you do yoga? You know, just making chatty conversation. And she's like, yeah, do you do yoga? And I'm like, yeah, I run a yoga nonprofit. We do work with people with eating disorders. And she says, funny, I run an eating disorder treatment center, and we're looking for a yoga program. And at this point, internally, you can't tell this from the video, Alec, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like,
what?
No treatment director at an eating disorder treatment center would ever meet some random waitress at a barbecue restaurant and say, come work with my clinically ill patients. Like, I just knew something was very weird. Like, that was too much. And I kind of awkwardly take her business card thinking, like, is somebody messing with me? Like, this is weird. And then I go to the last table. This is, again, right one after another. And there's this woman there who's been sitting there for like an hour and a half. And she hands me the bill, and there's a car key on it. And I was like, you forgot your car key? And she was like, oh, no, that's your car key. And I was like, my car key's in my pocket. She said, come outside with me. So I walk outside with her, and I'm really, my friends who know me are like, you looked really anxious. And I was like, yeah, I was really anxious. I didn't know if somebody was pulling a mean joke on me. And I walked outside, and this car drives up with a massive bow on it. And out of the front seat walks Diana, my first yoga teacher, who lives in Texas and I haven't seen in years. And I, you know, I cried and I hugged her, and I was so excited to see. This is the woman who introduced me to my yoga practice and was very much a maternal figure to me. My mom's very sick now, and she's been just a mama bear to me for a long time. And I was so excited to see her, and I knew she wouldn't pull anything mean on me. So speaking of those weird things, like Sanjay Gupta calling me out of the blue, this video went crazy viral. It got 30 million views. They put me on Good Morning America, The Today Show, NBC Nightly News with Brian Williams, all these crazy things. And my friends are all like, I didn't know you were a waitress. Like, well, I am, but I'm not. It was just random. And my friend had set the whole thing up, basically.
Wow.
He you know, basically a company was wanting to prank a waitress and had come to him and said, hey, you own this restaurant. Do you know any really deserving waitresses who could use a new car? And he's like, oh, yeah, I know somebody. Really sweet, and just blessings. I feel like my life has been one of those weird, like, Truman Show movies. Like, what? Twice? Like, Sanjay Gupta was pretty weird, but the 30 million views in Good Morning America, like, whoa, 10 Minutes of Fame was super weird.
So wow.
That's that.
Thanks for the story.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yeah, don't tell anyone.
We will tell anyone else.
Yeah, clearly not.
So, last little nugget. We like to end with one golden nugget of wisdom that you would offer to our listeners as they carry forward on the path.
Golden nugget of wisdom. Do you have more of a prompt? Like, what, just anything?
Yeah, I think anything. Life, you know?
Okay. One thing I've been learning and playing with myself right now, is play. Is the importance of play and doing things not to get to an end goal and not to get, like, my, I've been salsa dancing a lot recently, the past year. And I think play is so important and so necessary. And we hear play and we think, oh, it's that thing you do when you have spare time. Make time in your life for play, and it will invigorate every other part of your life, from work to relationships to mothering. So yeah, that's my nugget of wisdom to myself, and I hope it's beneficial to the rest of you.
Well, Chelsea, thank you so much for sharing with us Eat, Breathe, Thrive, and yourself.
Thank you,
it's such a pleasure.
Namaste.
My friends, thank you so much for listening through this episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast. May this interview instill trust, hope, and faith into any of us who have been impacted by an eating disorder or know someone who has. Chelsea Roth has a beautiful message and programs to share with you. She leads these trainings monthly across America and places in the world. You can find out where she is by going to eatbreathethrive.com and click on trainings in order to find upcoming programs. We are thrilled to say we have almost reached 100,000 downloads because of you. We are able to share inspirational stories about real yogis, one-on-one, face-to-face. And we couldn't do it without you. We have special things in store for you, and we share them through our newsletter and on Instagram. Sign up by visiting yogarevealed.com or follow us at yogarevealed on Instagram. May your day be blessed and filled with the perfect practice material. Keep noticing the signs. Until next time, namaste.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.